VOA 1, the hits.
Welcome to Learning English on the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver. Our program is designed for people learning English. We speak slowly, using simple grammar and a limited vocabulary. On today's show, Jill Robbins brings us Ask a Teacher. She explains how to use the terms even though and even if. We also hear from Mario Ritter, who brings us a story from Burkina Faso, where husbands are going to marriage school. And we close with the program American Stories. Today we hear the second and final part of The Bride Comes to Yellow Sky by Stephen Crane. But first, the theatrical magic that keeps New York's Broadway going during the latest COVID-19 spread has been performers ready to step in an emergency. Actor Carla Stickler went a step further. She returned to acting from retirement to save the musical Wicked. Stickler launched a new career as a software engineer in Chicago 3 years ago. But she canceled her vacation this winter and went to New York City's Center of Theater Performances, Broadway. She had agreed to replace a star of the show after much of the cast became infected with COVID-19. Stickler played the green-skinned Elphaba in the musical play. She may have been playing an evil witch, but Stickler's effort was all good. "It was like riding a bike," she said. "I got out there and I was like, oh, I remember this. This is really special, and I'm just going to try to enjoy every second of it." Her effort is just one example of the work Broadway's understudies do. They are standbys and fill-ins who keep shows open. Often, they learn several parts with little official rehearsing. The heavy pressure on theater companies to keep shows open is eased by these skillful performers. Actor Hugh Jackman recently praised the many understudies who kept his revival of The Music Man open. Stickler said the recognition of these less famous performers is important. "I think they sometimes get overlooked," she said, adding, "It's been really emotional to see the outpouring of love for all what they do." Stickler was not alone in trying to rescue Broadway. At one point over the holidays, 8 of the 12 actors in Broadway's Come From Away were substitutes. They included 2, Pearl's Son and Holly Ann Butler, who had left the production. Another, Marika Aubrey, returned to Broadway from The Traveling Show. Josh Breckenridge is the musical's dance captain. He is also a standby performer for 5 of the 6 males in the play. "It really took a village, and it was a beautiful village," Breckenridge said. "I'm very proud of us for nailing it." He also praised the crowds who watched the show, describing the support as wonderful. Breckenridge has been on Broadway with the Scottsboro Boys, the Ritz, and other shows. He hopes the theater system will learn from recent experiences and make changes to better meet difficult times. He called on the industry to employ more standbys and fill-ins. I hope that producers out there notice and start to hire more coverage so that we can avoid moments like this, he said. Breckinridge added, "We're literally the reason for the phrase, 'The show must go on.'" Stickler was one reason Wicked could continue this holiday season. On December 27th, she was driving with her husband and dog to Maine for a one-week vacation with friends. She got an urgent call from the producers to return to the musical. Stickler had last performed the part on Broadway in 2015. She had spent 10 years with the Broadway company and starred in a national series of Wicked. "Elphaba is just kind of something that lives in my body, and I think a lot of other understudies will say the same thing," she said. "I think everybody is really doing the best they can," she said. "I do think the fact that the show has been able to stay open is a testament to how devoted the actors are to the show and how great and talented the group of people that they have hired over the years are." While actors and crews working on Broadway are all vaccinated, wear masks, and get tested daily, infections have spread anyway. Several productions, including Aladdin, Hamilton, Dear Evan Hansen, The Lion King, and Six, suspended performances because of infected performers. Stickler is staying in New York this week just in case Wicked needs her help. Then she will travel back to Chicago, but she would not likely refuse a similar call to act in the future. "I would do it again in a heartbeat. I love the show," she said. "If I turn 100, I'll do it at my 100th birthday party."
In the West African nation of Burkina Faso, wives are often blamed when marriages run into trouble. The World Bank is supporting a project to teach men how to be better husbands by taking them to school. The program was organized by the Sahel Women's Empowerment and Demographic Dividend, or SWED. Yeli Owego attended one of the husband's schools to help him become a better spouse to Kwama Zopoka, his wife. Before taking part in the classes, life as a couple wasn't easy, Owego said. He said that there was a time when he did not think that women and men had much in common when it came to problems with family life. After the classes, however, he understood that married couples can help each other. The schools use many teaching techniques. They include role play to help the men understand the needs of their wives and how to meet them. For example, helping with housework. They also teach the men about women's rights, family planning, health, and hygiene. In addition, men are encouraged to include women in making family decisions. Navalu Bibata, of the Association for the Promotion of Women and Children, organized the project. She said the classes have made a big difference to women in the community. Some men have even attended the childbirth of their wives, she said. Bibata said, "This is a part of taking responsibility for the care of the children by the fathers." The program helps the men of the village who are not able to take part in the husband schools, Bibata said. That is because the men who did attend have become role models. Although these are the first schools of their kind in Burkina Faso, similar projects have been brought to countries like South Africa and Niger. Edward Wageni is worldwide head for the United Nations Women He for She Initiative. He said the husband schools can help reduce incidents of violence in the home. He said it helps men understand that women's rights are not just about women and girls. Gender equality is about everybody, he said. Wageni said, the husband schools also could be helpful in countries outside Africa, places where gender equality is better than in Burkina Faso. So, this is a good idea that can be replicated and even scaled up in other parts of the world, including those countries that feel they have made a lot of gains, he said. Zopoka, meanwhile, said the classes have made her husband much more helpful and considerate. And the love between her and her husband is growing, she said, adding that her husband now even brings her little gifts from the market. The national coordinator of the husband schools called the project a great success and said it will be expanded to other parts of the country. The second part of the project is due to start later this year. I'm Mario Ritter, Jr.
This week on Ask a Teacher, we answer a question from a reader in China. There's a question I've been thinking about for a long time. What is the difference between even though and even if? Could you tell me the answer? Thank you. Roy in China. Dear Roy, thanks for writing to us. You asked a question that many learners of English have. Let us begin with even though. Even though comes before a statement of fact. It has a similar use to the word but. Here are examples about travel to your country, Roy.
I want to travel to China, but I cannot because of COVID travel restrictions.
Now, see how you can say the same thing with the expression even though.
Even though I want to visit China, I cannot because of the pandemic.
Compare these statements with even though and the expression despite the fact that.
Despite the fact that snow fell on Monday, our schools opened. Our schools opened Monday, even though there was snow.
In both statements, it is true that snow fell on Monday, And although our schools often close due to snow, they did not on this day. Grammar expert Betty Azar says that statements with even if are similar to ones with whether or not. Even if tells us that there is a certain condition that does not matter. Compare these examples.
I will take the dog for a walk, even if it is raining. Whether or not it is raining, I will take the dog for a walk.
For both statements, the rain is possible but may not happen. You will sometimes find that even if describes an unreal situation.
Even if I could travel to Mars, I would not go there. I cannot attend the party, even if you could change the time.
In these examples, it is impossible to travel to Mars, and the time of the party cannot be changed. However, the speakers say that in any case, they are not interested in traveling to Mars and are not able to attend the party. I hope this helps you understand the difference between even if and even though, Roy. What question do you have about American English? Send us an email at learningenglish@voanews.com. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Jill Robbins.
From VOA Learning English, this is American Stories. Our story is called The Bride Comes to Yellow Sky. It was written by Stephen Crane. Today, we will hear the second and final part of the story.
Don't know whether there'll be a fight or not, answered one man firmly. But there'll be some shooting, some good shooting.
The young man who had warned them waved his hand.
Oh, there'll be a fight fast enough if anyone wants it. Anybody can get in a fight out there in the street. There's a fight just waiting.
The salesman seemed to be realizing the possibility of personal danger.
What did you say his name was?
He asked.
Scratchy Wilson.
Voices answered together.
And will he kill anybody? What are you going to do? Does this happen often? Can he break in that door?
No, he can't break in that door, replied the saloon keeper. He's tried it 3 times. But when he comes, you better lie down on the floor, stranger. He's sure to shoot at the door, and a bullet may come through.
After that, the salesman watched the door steadily. The time had not yet come for him to drop to the floor, but he carefully moved near the wall.
Will he kill anybody?
He asked again. The men laughed without humor at the question.
He's here to shoot, and he's here for trouble. I don't see any good in experimenting with him.
But what do you do in a situation like this? What can you do?
A man answered.
Well, he and Jack Potter,
but the other men interrupted together.
Jack Potter's in San Antonio.
Well, who is he? What's he got to do with this?
Oh, he's the town policeman. He goes out and fights Scratchy when he starts acting this way.
A nervous, waiting silence was upon them. The salesman saw that the saloon keeper, without a sound, had taken a gun from a hiding place. Then he saw the man signal to him, so he moved across the room.
You better come with me behind this table.
No thanks, said the salesman.
I'd rather be where I can get out the back door.
At that, the saloon keeper made a kindly but forceful motion. The salesman obeyed and found himself seated on a box with his head below the level of the table. The saloon keeper sat comfortably upon a box nearby.
You see, he whispered, Scratchy Wilson is a wonder with a gun, a perfect wonder. And when he gets excited, everyone gets out of his path. He's a terror when he's drunk. When he's not drinking, he's all right. Wouldn't hurt anything. Nicest fella in town. But when he's drunk, be careful.
There were periods of stillness.
I wish Jack Potter were back from San Antonio, said the saloon keeper. He shot Wilson once, in the leg. He'd come in and take care of this thing.
Soon, they heard from a distance the sound of a shot, followed by three wild screams. The men looked at each other.
Here he comes, they said.
A man in a red shirt turned a corner and walked into the middle of the main street of Yellow Sky. In each hand, the man held a long, heavy, blue-black gun. Often he screamed, and these cries rang through the seemingly deserted village. The scream sounded sharply over the roofs with a power that seemed to have no relation to the ordinary strength of a man's voice. These fierce cries rang against walls of silence. The man's face flamed in a hot anger born of whiskey. His eyes, rolling but watchful, hunted the still doorways and windows. He walked with the movement of a midnight cat. As the thoughts came to him, he roared threatening information. The long guns hung from his hands like feathers. They were moved with electric speed. The muscles of his neck straightened and sank as passion moved him. The only sounds were his terrible invitations to battle. The calm houses preserved their dignity at the passing of this small thing in the middle of the street. There was no offer of fight, no offer of fight. The man called to the sky. There were no answers. He screamed and shouted and waved his guns here and everywhere. Finally, the man was at the closed door of the saloon. He went to it and, beating upon it with his gun, demanded drink. The door remained closed. He picked up a bit of paper from the street and nailed it to the frame of the door with a knife. Then he turned his back upon the place and walked to the opposite side of the street. Turning quickly and easily, he fired the guns at the bit of paper. He missed it by half an inch. He cursed at himself and went away. Later, he comfortably shot out all the windows of the house of his best friend. Scratchy was playing with this town. It was a toy for him. But still, there was no offer of fight. The name of Jack Potter, his ancient enemy, entered his mind. He decided that it would be a good thing if he went to Potter's house and, by shooting at it, make him come out and fight. He moved in the direction of his desire, singing some sort of war song. When he arrived at it, Potter's house presented the same still front as had the other homes. Taking a good position, the man screamed an invitation to battle. But this house regarded him as a great stone god might have done. It gave no sign. After a little wait, the man screamed more invitations, mixing them with wonderful curses. After a while came the sight of a man working himself into deepest anger over the stillness of a house. He screamed at it. He shot again and again. He paused only for breath or to reload his guns. Potter and his bride walked rapidly. Sometimes they laughed together, quietly and a little foolishly.
"Next corner, dear," he said finally.
They put forth the efforts of a pair walking against a strong wind. Potter was ready to point the first appearance of the new home. Then, as they turned the corner, they came face to face with the man in the red shirt, who was feverishly loading a large gun. Immediately the man dropped his empty gun to the ground and, like lightning, pulled out another. The second gun was aimed at Potter's chest. There was a silence. Potter couldn't open his mouth. Quickly he loosened his arm from the woman's grasp and dropped the bag to the sand. As for the bride, her face had become the color of an old cloth. She was motionless. The two men faced each other at a distance of 9 feet.
Behind the gun, Wilson smiled with a new and quiet cruelty.
"Tried to surprise me," he said. "Tried to surprise me."
His eyes grew more evil. As Potter made a slight movement, the man pushed his gun sharply forward.
"No, don't you do it, Jack Potter. Don't you move a finger toward a gun yet. Don't you move a muscle. The time has come for me to settle with you, and I'm going to do it my own way, slowly, with no interruption. So just listen to what I tell you."
Potter looked at his enemy. "I haven't got a gun with me, Scratchy," he said. "Honest, I haven't." He was stiffening and steadying. But at the back of his mind floated a picture of the beautiful car on the train. He thought of the glory of the wedding, the spirit of his new life.
"You know I fight when I have to fight, Scratchy Wilson. But I haven't got a gun with me. You have to do all the shooting yourself."
His enemy's face turned pale with anger. He stepped forward and whipped his gun back and forth before Potter's chest.
"Don't you tell me you haven't got a gun with you, you dog! Don't you tell me a lie like that! There isn't a man in Texas who ever saw you without a gun! Don't think I'm a kid!"
His eyes burned with anger and his breath came heavily.
"I don't think you're a kid," answered Potter. His feet had not moved an inch backward. "I think you're a complete fool. I tell you I haven't got a gun and I haven't. If you're going to shoot me, you better begin now. You'll never get a chance like this again."
So much enforced reasoning had weakened Wilson's anger. He was calmer.
"If you haven't got a gun, why haven't you got a gun?"
he asked.
"Been to church?"
"I haven't got a gun because I've just come from San Antonio with my wife. I'm married," said Potter. "And if I had thought there'd be a fool like you here when I brought my wife home, I would have had a gun, and don't you forget it."
"Married?"
said Scratchy, not at all understanding.
"Yes, married. I'm married," said Potter clearly.
"Married?" said Scratchy. Seemingly for the first time, he saw the pale, frightened woman at the other side.
"No!"
he said. He was like a creature allowed a glance at another world. He moved a pace backward, and his arm with the gun dropped to his side.
"Is this the lady?"
he asked.
"Yes, this is the lady," answered Potter.
There was another period of silence.
"Well," said Wilson at last, slowly, "I suppose we won't fight now."
"We won't if you say so, Scratchy. You know, I didn't make the trouble."
Potter lifted the bag.
"Well, I guess we won't fight, Jack," said Wilson.
He was looking at the ground.
"Married."
He was not a student of good manners. It was merely that in the presence of this foreign condition, he was a simple child of the wildlands. He picked up his fallen gun, and he went away. His feet made deep tracks in the heavy sand.
Our show. But we'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place, with another Learning English program on the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Katie Weaver.